The prospector ship Pale Morning had been working the Hungaria group for 11 days when Captain Elena Reyes found something that shouldn't exist. It showed up on the survey scanner at the edge of resolution, a return signal that the computer flagged as anomalous and then couldn't categorize. Reyes had been mining the belt for 19 years. She'd seen every kind of rock and ice and metal that the solar system had to offer. She knew what an asteroid looked like on a scanner, and she knew what a ship looked like, and this was neither. It was large, 200 meters, maybe more. It wasn't tumbling. It wasn't orbiting anything. It was just there, hanging in the dark between two unremarkable rocks, as if someone had placed it with intention and then walked away. "That's not natural," she said to no one in particular. Her navigator, a man named Okonkwo, who had joined the crew 3 months ago on Ganymede, looked at the display and said nothing. Reyes changed course. A belter who found something in the rock followed the find. That was the law. That was how you survived. She brought the Pale Morning in close and spent 3 days running every scan her ship could manage. What she found changed everything, and then it killed her. 3 weeks later, the Pale Morning's distress beacon began screaming into the void, and the crew of the Rocinante heard it. The distress call came in at 0300, which was the universe's way of reminding James Holden that emergencies didn't respect sleep schedules. He was in his bunk on the Rocinante, halfway through a dream about coffee that actually tasted like coffee, when the ship's alert tone cut through the dark. He was up and moving before his brain fully caught up with his body, pulling on a jumpsuit and heading for the ops deck with the muscle memory of a man who had been woken by alarms more times than he could count. Naomi was already there. She was always already there. Holden had never once in their years together beaten Naomi to the ops deck during an alert. He suspected she didn't actually sleep, just ran low power calculations until something interesting happened. "Distress beacon," she said. "Belter Prospector, Registry Pale Morning. They're broadcasting on emergency frequency, automated SOS, no voice communication." "Where?" "Hungaria Group. Sparse field, nothing out there worth mentioning. They're about 9 hours from our current position at Standard Burn." Alex appeared from the pilot station, a coffee bulb in one hand. He'd been on watch. "Signal's been broadcasting for about 16 hours. No response from any closer ship. We're not exactly in a busy lane out here." "Anyone else in range?" "Couple of rock hoppers, but they're small. No medical facilities, no way to take on crew if the morning ship is compromised. We're the best option by a wide margin." Holden looked at the display. The Rocinante was running a cargo contract from Ganymede to Ceres, hauling agricultural equipment that nobody was in a hurry to receive. A 9-hour diversion to answer a distress call wouldn't break them, but it would eat into their margin. Except Holden had never been good at that math. He'd never been able to look at a distress beacon and calculate whether the people sending it were worth the fuel. "Alex, change course. Best burn to the Pale Morning. Naomi, try to raise them on voice comms. If their crew is alive, I want to know what we're walking into."
"And if they're not alive?" Alex asked.
"Then we bring them home anyway." Amos came through the hatch, fully dressed, boots on, as if he'd been expecting the call. "We going somewhere?" he asked.
"Rescue op, prospector in distress, 9 hours out."
Amos nodded once. "I'll get the med bay prepped. If their ship's dark, they'll be cold and hungry when we get there." He turned and walked away without waiting for a response. That was Amos. He heard the situation, identified the practical need, and went to meet it. No debate, no calculation, no moral philosophy. Naomi was hailing the Pale Morning on every frequency they had. Static. More static. 16 hours of broadcast and no voice contact, Naomi said. Either their comms are down or nobody's in a condition to answer.
Or nobody's left to answer, Alex said quietly.
The Rocinante changed course, her Epstein drive burning bright against the black, heading for a ship that couldn't speak for itself. Holden stood at the ops display and watched the distance numbers count down, and tried not to think about what they'd find when they arrived. He was good at many things. Not thinking about worst-case scenarios was not one of them. Alex felt the wrongness before the sensors confirmed it. 9 hours of hard burn, and the pale morning was finally visible on the forward cameras. She was tumbling, slow, and sick, rotating on two axes with the lazy spin of something that had lost all attitude control. No drive plume, no running lights. Just the distress beacon. No drive signature, Alex reported. Reactor's cold, or close to it. She's running on battery backup. Life signs? Holden asked from behind him. Alex ran the scan twice. Thermal signatures consistent with three, maybe four people. Clustered near the bow, probably the galley or the forward berthing compartment. Warmest spot on a dead ship. Not in the engine room? Engine room's cold as the hull. If anyone was trying to fix the reactor, they gave up. Or couldn't, Naomi said. Alex brought the Rocinante alongside with the careful precision of a surgeon threading a needle. The pale morning's spin complicated things. You couldn't just match velocities and dock. You had to match the spin, synchronize your approach with the tumble. Find the window where the airlock was oriented right, and hit it clean. He'd done harder. The ring gates, where timing was everything, and a mistake meant you stopped existing. Thoth station under fire, docking on a spinning drum that didn't want to be docked with. This was tricky, but it was the kind of tricky that Alex lived for. Matching rotation, he said. Hold on, this is going to feel weird. The Rocinante rolled, matching the pale morning's tumble, and for a disorienting moment, the stars spun around them. Then Alex fired the maneuvering thrusters, closing the gap, and the magnetic docking clamps locked with a solid thunk that he felt through the hull. Docked and sealed, he said. Pressures holding on their side, airlocks intact. Amos, Naomi, you're with me, Holden said. Alex, keep us locked on and ready to disengage if anything looks wrong. Define wrong. You'll know it when you see it. Alex watched them go through the airlock, three figures in emergency suits disappearing into the dark mouth of the pale morning. The ship groaned around them, metal on metal, the sound of two vessels locked together and spinning through the void. He kept his hands on the controls and waited. Waiting was the hardest part of flying. The approaches, the docking, the combat maneuvers, those were easy because your hands were moving, and your mind was engaged. Waiting was just sitting with the silence and trusting that the people you cared about would come back through that airlock. The comm crackled, Holden's voice, tight and professional. Alex, we've got three survivors, all hypothermic, one critical, and we've got a body. The captain? The captain. She's dead, Alex, and from what I'm seeing here, the reactor didn't fail on its own. Alex looked at the pale morning's hull through the forward camera. At the dark windows and the silent running lights, and the slow tumble that no pilot had corrected, because no pilot was left to correct it. Copy that, he said, standing by. He sat in his chair and kept the Rocinante steady, two ships spinning together in the dark, and thought about what it meant when a ship died, and it wasn't an accident. Nothing good. It never meant anything good. The smell hit them first. Recycled air that had gone stale and sour, with an undertone of something chemical. Machine oil, or coolant, or the slow decay of systems that had been running on nothing for too long. The emergency lights cast everything in a dim red glow that made the corridors of the pale morning look like the inside of something alive and sick. Naomi had been on dying ships before. She'd grown up on ships like this one, Delta prospectors held together with patches and stubbornness, and the kind of engineering that wasn't in any manual. She knew the sounds a ship made when it was struggling, and the silence it made when it had given up. The pale morning was somewhere in between. Temperature reads 4 degrees, she said, checking her suit's HUD. They'd been cold for a while. Holden was ahead of her in the corridor, his suit lights cutting tunnels through the red gloom. Behind her, Amos moved with the quiet efficiency of a man, who had been through enough airlocks that the process no longer required conscious thought. They found the first crew member in the galley, a man in his 50s, belter tall, strapped into a chair with a blanket wrapped around his shoulders. He was unconscious but breathing, his skin pale and his lips tinged blue.
"He's alive," Naomi said, checking his vitals through her suit's med scanner, barely. "Core temp is dangerously low."
"Amos, get him back to the Rossi," Holden said, med bay warming blankets, IV fluids.
Amos scooped the man up with a gentleness that always surprised people who didn't know him. He carried the unconscious Belter back toward the airlock like he weighed nothing. Naomi and Holden moved deeper. The corridors were narrow, designed for the minimum space required by maritime law. Her suit scraped against the walls as she turned sideways to fit through a junction. They found two more crew members in the engine room. Tools floated around them in the zero-G, turning slow circles in the air like a mechanical mobile. One was conscious, a woman with close-cropped gray hair and engineer's hands. She looked up at them with eyes that held equal parts relief and exhaustion.
"Containment failure," the engineer said, her voice rough. "We caught it before it went critical, but we had to shut everything down. Emergency protocols," she paused. "I've been trying to fix it for 2 days.
"I'm Naomi Nagata," Naomi said. "Exo of the Rocinante.
I can walk."
"Good. We're getting you out of here." The engineer's name was Kaminsky. Naomi could tell she was good just by looking at the engine room. Even in crisis, the tools were organized. The panels that had been opened were labeled. Whatever had gone wrong with this reactor, Kaminsky had been fighting it with method and discipline, not panic. The other person in engineering was barely conscious. Young, maybe 20, wearing a jumpsuit that was too big for them. Naomi got them unstrapped and moving while Holden took Kaminsky's arm.
"That's four," Holden said. "Manifest says six crew. Wow."
Kaminsky's face tightened. Okonkwo is gone, the navigator. He disappeared before the reactor failed. Just vanished.
"And the captain?"
The silence was answer enough.
Naomi found her. Captain Elena Reyes of the Pale Morning, sitting in her command chair in the cockpit, with her eyes closed and her hands folded in her lap. She looked peaceful. She looked like someone who had simply decided to sleep. But her skin was the color of ash, and when Naomi checked for a pulse, there was nothing.
CO2. Poisoning.
When the scrubbers failed, the captain must have stayed at her post, trying to keep her ship alive while the air slowly turned against her. She'd probably sent the crew to the galley in the engine room, where the smaller spaces held breathable air longer. She'd saved them by sacrificing herself. A quiet death, a Belter's death. Alone in the dark with her ship. Naomi stood there for a moment, looking at the dead woman's face, and felt something she'd learned to carry a long time ago. The weight of it. The waste of it. A competent captain. Dead on a ship that shouldn't have killed her. She reached over and checked the navigation console. The ship's logs were there, everything recorded, everything preserved. Naomi started copying the data to her hand terminal. Whatever had killed Captain Reyes, the answer was in these logs, and Naomi intended to find.
"Holden," she said over the comm.
"Captain's dead. I'm pulling the ship's logs."
A pause. She could hear him processing it the way she always could.
"Copy," he said. "Bring everything."
Naomi took one last look at Captain Reyes. Then she turned off the distress beacon, because its job was done, and went back to help the living.
The coffee maker on the Rocinante had two settings, terrible and broken. Today it was managing terrible, which Holden considered a victory. He sat in the galley with his hands wrapped around a bulb of something that was technically coffee in the same way that recycled water was technically water. It was hot, and it was caffeinated, and that was enough. After 18 hours of running rescue operations on the Pale Morning, enough was a luxury. The three surviving crew members were in the medical bay. Amos had gotten them warmed up and stabilized, running the autodock through its protocols with the practical efficiency he brought to everything. The engineer Kaminsky was already sitting up and talking. She wanted to get back to her ship and fix the reactor herself. Holden understood the impulse. Your ship was your home. When your home was broken, you fixed it.
You didn't sit in someone else's medical bay drinking someone else's terrible coffee while strangers poked around in your engine room. But Naomi had been through the Pale Morning's logs, and what she'd found wasn't sitting right with anyone. She floated into the galley and pulled a coffee bulb from the dispenser without checking the taste first. She had the look of someone whose mind was running faster than she wanted it to. "We need to talk about the captain," she said. Holden nodded. The body was still in the Pale Morning's cockpit. They'd sealed the compartment and dropped the temperature, but they couldn't leave her there forever. Maritime law and the belt was clear about remains. You brought them home if you could. You committed them to the void if you couldn't. "Kaminsky says she has family on Ceres," Naomi said, "a daughter. Then we bring her home. That's a 3-week detour. We've already missed our Ganymede delivery window." Holden took a sip of his coffee. It tasted like someone had filtered engine coolant through a sock, but it was warm going down. "What's the cargo?" "Agricultural equipment. Seed stock. Hydroponic rigs for one of the surface farms." "Anyone going to die without it?" Naomi considered this. "No. They've got reserves. But the contract has a penalty clause for late delivery, and we're already going to take a hit for the rescue detour." "Then we bring the captain home." He said it simply, the way he said most things. Not because it was easy, or because it was profitable, but because it was right. Holden had learned a long time ago that the moment you started calculating the cost of doing the decent thing, you'd already lost something you couldn't get back. Naomi looked at him for a long moment. Then she smiled, just barely. The kind of smile that said she'd already known what his answer would be, and had asked the question anyway just to hear someone say it out loud. "I'll plot the course," she said. "And Naomi, the Ganymede contract. Send them a message explaining what happened. Full transparency. If they want to penalize us for stopping to save 3 lives and bring a dead woman home to her daughter, that tells us everything we need to know about whether we want to work with them again." She nodded and pushed off toward the ops deck. Holden watched her go, then turned back to his coffee. The thing about space was that it didn't care. The vacuum didn't care about your schedule or your contracts or your carefully calculated profit margins. It would kill you with the same indifference whether you were a saint or a pirate. The only thing that pushed back against that indifference was the choices people made. Every act of kindness in the void was a small rebellion against the universe's fundamental disregard for human life. Holden finished his coffee, crushed the bulb, and floated toward the medical bay to check on the survivors. There was still work to do. There was always work to do. Miller had a rule about dead captains. You looked at the body, you looked at the ship, and you let the ship tell you what the body couldn't. He wasn't on the Rocinante, of course. He wasn't anywhere, not really. But the data was there, flowing through the network like water through pipes, and Miller was good at following the flow. He'd been a detective on Ceres for 20 years before everything changed, and some habits didn't die just because you did. The Pale Morning's logs told a simple story on the surface. Reactor containment failure, emergency shutdown, loss of power, distress beacon. Textbook. The kind of thing that happened to old ships running on thin margins with patches on top of patches. Nothing suspicious, nothing worth investigating. Except. Miller tilted his hat back and studied the maintenance records. The Pale Morning had been refitted 8 months ago at Tycho Station. New containment seals, new magnetic bottles, a full overhaul of the primary cooling system. The kind of work that cost more than most prospectors made in a year. Someone had invested serious money in keeping the ship running. And then the containment had failed anyway. Brand new seals, 8 months old, failing in exactly the way that old, degraded seals fail. But Miller didn't believe in that kind of coincidence. Not when money was involved. Money always had a direction, and if you followed it long enough, you found a person at the other end making decisions that other people had to live with. Or die from. He pulled the crew manifest. 6 registered. 4 on board when the Indomitable arrived. The captain dead. That left one name unaccounted for. Ravi Okonkwo, listed as navigator. His personal effects were still in his cabin. His suit was still in its locker. But Ravi Okonkwo was not on the Pale Morning, and according to the ship's airlock logs, he hadn't used any of the external doors. People didn't just vanish from ships, not in the real world anyway. In the real world, people who vanished had either been removed or had arranged their own disappearance, and both options meant someone had something to hide. Miller dug deeper. Okonkwo had joined the cruise 6 months ago, 2 months after the refit. Before that, he'd worked docks on Ganymede. Before that, a stint on a transport running between Earth and the Belt. Before that, the trail went cold, in a way that felt deliberate. Manufactured identity. Good enough to pass a background check. Not good enough to survive real scrutiny. Whoever Ravi Okonkwo really was, he'd gotten himself onto the Pale Morning for a reason. The question was what the Pale Morning had found. Prospectors worked the belt looking for rocks worth mining. Most of the time they found nothing. Sometimes they found nickel or platinum. And very occasionally they found something that someone else wanted badly enough to kill for. Miller pulled the navigation logs next. The Pale Morning's last heading before the reactor failed put her in a region of the belt that was, on paper, unremarkable. Low-density asteroid field, nothing flagged in any of the mining surveys. But the ship had been there for 3 days before the failure. 3 days was a long time to spend in an unremarkable patch of nothing. He saved the coordinates and flagged the file. Then he leaned back, put his hands behind his head and thought about Ravi Okonkwo, who had appeared from nowhere and stalled himself on a freshly refitted prospecting vessel, and then disappeared from a sealed ship in the middle of the belt. It was a puzzle. Miller liked puzzles. They were the only thing that made the universe feel like it had edges, like there were answers waiting if you were patient enough and stubborn enough to find them. He'd find this one. He always did. The dead deserved that much. And the living deserved to know why. The Rocinante was 3 days out from the Pale Morning when the argument started. It wasn't a loud argument. The loud ones were easy. Amos would say something blunt. Someone would push back. And it would burn itself out like a flare in vacuum. The quiet arguments were the dangerous ones. The ones that settled into the ship like a change in air pressure that everyone could feel, but no one wanted to name. It started in the galley, the way most things did. Naomi had the navigation console pulled up on the wall display, the Rocinante's course plotted in a clean blue line from their current position to Ceres. 3 weeks. 3 weeks to deliver a dead woman to her daughter, and 3 weeks of lost revenue on the Ganymede contract. We could split the difference, Alex said from the pilot's chair, where he was eating rehydrated noodles with the careful attention of a man who had learned to appreciate bad food. Drop the captain's remains at Tycho. They've got facilities. Her family could collect from there, saves us 9 days. No, Holden said. I'm just saying it's an option, Hoss. It's not. Naomi didn't look up from the display. She was running numbers, the way she always ran numbers, like the universe was a problem that would yield to enough math. Her fingers moved across the interface with the fluid precision of someone who thought in trajectories and delta V the way other people thought in words. He's right that it's an option, she said. He's wrong that we should take it. But we should at least talk about the fuel costs. We burned hard to match the Pale Morning's rotation, and this detour puts us below our reserve threshold for the Ganymede run. We'll need to top off at Ceres, and docking fees have gone up again. How much? Holden asked. Enough that we're looking at a net loss on this whole run even before the penalty clause. Amos leaned against the galley bulkhead, arms crossed, watching the conversation the way he watched most conversations, like a man studying a card game he'd already figured out. He'd come up from the machine shop with grease on his hands and hadn't bothered to wash it off. Way I see it, Amos said, we already made the call. We stopped. We saved 3 people. Now we're bringing their captain home. Everything after that is just accounting. Accounting is how we keep the lights on, Naomi said, but there was no heat in it, she agreed with him. She just needed the numbers to make sense in her head before she could let it go. The Ganymede contract, Holden said. Did they respond to our message? Naomi pulled up the comms log. They acknowledged. No mention of the penalty clause, no mention of understanding either. Just acknowledged. That's corporate for we'll decide how to screw you later, Alex said. Amos shrugged. Then we find another contract. Always someone who needs something moved from one rock to another. It was the kind of simple truth that Amos specialized in. The man had a gift for cutting through complexity to find the hard, clean thing underneath. He'd grown up in Baltimore, in the kind of circumstances that either killed you or stripped away everything that wasn't essential. Alex swiveled his chair to face the group. He'd been flying the Rocinante for years now, and the ship responded to him the way a horse responded to a rider it trusted. He could feel her moods and the vibration of the deck plates, could tell when something was off before the diagnostics caught it. "I've been thinking about that ship," he said, "the Pale Morning. Something about the reactor failure doesn't sit right with me." "Kaminsky said the containment seals failed," Holden said. "New seals. 8 months old." "That's what I mean. I've seen a lot of reactor failures, and new seals don't just fail like that. Not the way Kaminsky described it. She said it was like the magnetic bottle collapsed all at once. Not degraded. Collapsed." Naomi looked up. "That's not how containment failure works."
"No, it's not."
The galley went quiet. The hum of the Rocinante's drive filled the silence, steady and constant, the sound of a ship that was healthy and whole. Outside, the stars turned their slow wheel, indifferent to the small human dramas playing out in the dark between them.
"You're saying someone sabotaged it," Holden said.
Alex held up his hands. "I'm saying the physics don't add up. That's all I'm saying." "The missing crew member," Naomi said. "The navigator. Okonkwo." She'd been thinking about it too. Of course she had. Naomi didn't miss things. "Six registered, four on board," she said. "The captain dead. One unaccounted for. No airlock activity."
"People don't vanish from sealed ships," Amos said.
"Not without help," Alex agreed. Holden looked at his crew. These people, his people. They'd been through things together that had no name, had seen the universe crack open and reveal something vast and incomprehensible underneath. And they were still here. Still arguing about fuel costs and making the decent choice even when it was expensive. "We tell the authorities at Cirrus," he said. "Everything we know. The reactor failure, the missing navigator, all of it. Let them investigate."
"Since when do Cirrus authorities investigate anything that happens outside their jurisdiction?" Amos asked. It wasn't cynical.
"Then we make noise until someone does," Holden said. "It's what we do." Naomi almost smiled. "Almost. It's what you do. The rest of us just get pulled along."
"And yet you keep flying with me."
"Someone has to do the math." The moment broke, and something in the galley's atmosphere shifted. The quiet argument was over, dissolved not by resolution but by the shared understanding that they were all on the same side. They always were. That was the thing about this crew. They argued about how, never about why. Alex turned back to his controls. "I'll plot the most fuel-efficient course to Cirrus. We can shave a day if I do a gravity assist off Vesta."
"Do it," Naomi said.
Amos pushed off the bulkhead. "I'll go check on our guests. The engineer, Kaminsky, wanted to talk about the containment system. Might as well hear what she has to say while we've still got her on board." He floated toward the medical bay, and Holden watched him go.
"Mwani."
It was one of those contradictions that made Amos who he was, the kind of man who could break someone in half without hesitation, and then sit beside a frightened stranger and make them feel safe. Naomi closed the navigation display and moved to the comm station. "I'm going to pull the Pale Morning's transponder history. Where she'd been in the last year, who she'd docked with, what contracts she was running."
"Good. What?"
"Holden." She paused, her hand on the console.
"I know.
Just making sure you know what you're signing us up for."
"I always know."
She gave him a look that said they both knew that wasn't true, and then she turned to her work. Holden floated alone in the galley for a moment, listening to his ship. The Rocinante hummed around him, alive and present, carrying them all through the dark. He thought about the dead captain on the Pale Morning, sitting in her chair with her hands folded. His console chirped. An incoming data packet, routed through the network from an address he didn't recognize. No sender ID, no header. Just raw data, clean and precise, tagged with coordinates and a name. Ravi Okonkwo. Manufactured identity. Trail goes cold at Ganymede. Containment failure was not accidental. The Pale Morning found something at these coordinates. Someone wanted it buried. Below the text, a set of navigation coordinates in the belt. And at the bottom, three words that Holden hadn't expected to see. Three words from someone who shouldn't have been able to send anything to anyone. Because as far as anyone knew, he was dead. You're welcome, Holden. Miller.call. Holden stared at the message for a long time. Then he called his crew back to the galley. They had work to do. They gathered in the ops deck, the four of them floating around the central display like planets around a dim star. The coordinates from Miller's message glowed in the holographic field, a single point of light in a three-dimensional map of the belt. Holden had shown them the message, all of it. He didn't keep secrets from his crew. That was Rule 1. Rule 1? Miller, Naomi said. She said the name like she was testing the weight of it. Miller's dead, Holden. I know. People who are dead don't send data packets. And yet. She looked at him for a long moment, then turned back to the display. Whatever she was thinking, she filed it away for later. Naomi was good at that. She could hold a dozen unresolved questions in her head and keep working while the answers sorted themselves out. The coordinates put us in the Hungaria group, she said. Sparse field, mostly small bodies. Nothing flagged in any mining survey. It's about 4 days from our current position. And 3 weeks in the wrong direction from Ceres, Alex said. No. Naomi traced a line on the display. That's the thing. It's almost on the way. We swing through, take a look, add maybe 6 days to the Ceres run. 7 if we need to match velocity with something. Amos was cleaning his fingernails with a small knife, which was his way of paying close attention. Take a look at what, though? We don't even know what we're looking for. We know the Pale Morning spent 3 days at those coordinates, Holden said. We know someone planted a navigator with a fake identity on that ship. We know that navigator disappeared and the reactor failed in a way it shouldn't have. Whatever they found out there, someone wanted it buried. Someone killed for it, Amos corrected. The captain's dead. That's not burying something. That's murder. The words settled into the room. Murder. I want to talk to Kaminsky, Holden said. They found the engineer in the medical bay, sitting up on the edge of her bunk with a cup of tea that Okoye had made for her. Kaminsky's color was better now, the blue gone from her lips, but her eyes had the hollow look of someone who had stared into something dark and hadn't quite come back yet. The coordinates, Holden said, pulling them up on his hand terminal and showing her. Your ship spent 3 days here before the reactor failed. What were you doing? Kaminsky looked at the display. Something passed across her face, quick and complicated, like watching weather change on a planet. Captain Reyes found something, she said, on the survey scans, an object, big, maybe 200 meters. Not on any charts, not in any database. Everything about it was wrong. Wrong how? Naomi asked. Geometric, smooth surfaces, right angles, the kind of wrong that means someone dealt it. The ops deck went very quiet, even Amos stopped cleaning his nails. You found a structure, Holden said. Captain Reyes found a structure. She wanted to get closer, do a proper survey.
Samiai!
But the captain didn't listen. No, she was a belter. When a belter finds something in the rock, it's theirs. That's the law. She brought us in close and we spent 3 days running every scan we had. Kaminsky paused, wrapping both hands around her tea. It was old. Whatever it was old in a way that made my teeth hurt to think about, not protomolecule. Okoye ran the spectrographic analysis. The materials didn't match anything in the Ring Builder database either. This was something else.
Something older, Naomi said softly.
Yeah.
And then, the reactor failed, Holden said.
Kaminsky's jaw tightened, and then Okonkwo spent a shift alone in engineering, and then the reactor failed.
He sabotaged it.
I can't prove it, but new magnetic bottles don't collapse like that. I've been an engineer for 22 years. I know what a manufacturing defect looks like, and I know what sabotage looks like. And that was sabotage. He killed the ship to keep us from getting back to port with what we'd found. And then, he vanished.
There's a service crawlway between the inner and outer hull. It connects to the emergency airlock on the ventral side. The logs wouldn't show it because it's not a standard egress point. He could have cycled it manually and evaded to a pickup ship. If someone was waiting for him.
Amos unfolded his arms.
So, someone put a guy on your ship. He waited until you found what they didn't want found. He broke the ship to kill the crew and the data.
That's what I think happened.
Yes.
That's thorough, Amos said with the flat appraisal of someone who understood thoroughness in its ugliest forms.
Holden looked at his crew. He could see the decision forming in each of them. Alex had his pilot's face on, already thinking about approach vectors. Naomi was running calculations in her head. Amos had put his knife away, which meant he was ready to work.
We go, Holden said.
Nobody argued. Nobody needed to. Some decisions weren't really decisions at all. They were just the crew of the Rocinante being who they were.
Naomi, plot the course. Alex, take us in quiet. Low emissions, passive sensors only until we know what we're looking at.
Define anything, Amos said.
Use your imagination.
Amos smiled. It was not a reassuring smile. Copy that.
Naomi was already at the navigation console, her fingers moving.
4 days, 11 hours at standard burn.
I can shave 6 hours if we push to 1.3 G.
Do it, Holden said. Then he turned back to Kaminsky. We're going to find what your captain found, and then we're going to make sure the people who killed her can't pretend it doesn't exist.
Kaminsky looked at him with eyes that were tired and grief-stricken and underneath it all furious.
Captain Reyes deserved better than dying in the dark.
She did, and she's going to get it. He meant it. He always meant it. That was his gift and his curse, the thing that made people follow him, and the thing that kept getting them shot at.
James Holden believed that the truth mattered, that silence was complicity, and that the universe owed its dead an accounting.
The Rocinante changed course, her drive burning bright against the black, heading for a place where something impossible was waiting in the dark between the rocks.
Money was the oldest trail in the universe, older than blood, older than fear, older than the fusion drives that pushed humanity out into the dark. You could lose a body, you could fake a death. You could scrub a database and burn a ship and scatter the ashes into the void, but money always left a mark.
Miller followed the mark.
He started with Ravi Okonkwo, or whatever the man's real name was. The manufactured identity was good work.
Proper documentation, a plausible history. The kind of backstory that held up under casual inspection. But Miller wasn't casual. He was thorough, and he was dead, and the dead had nothing but time.
The Ganymede employment records listed Okonkwo as a dock worker for 14 months. Shift logs, pay stubs, even a disciplinary note for showing up late.
The details were convincing.
Too convincing, actually. Real employment histories had gaps and contradictions. This one was clean in a way that real life never was.
Before Ganymede, a transport called the Meridian Cross, Miller pulled their crew manifests and found Okonkwo listed for 8 months. But when he cross-referenced the Meridian Cross's port records with Okonkwo's supposed shifts, three of them overlapped with ports the ship had never visited. Someone had built the history from templates without checking the ship's actual route.
Amateur hour. Or maybe just arrogant. People who had enough money to manufacture identities often assumed no one would bother to look that closely.
They were usually right. But Miller had always been the exception that proved the rule. He traced the money backward. Okonkwo's wages on Ganymede had been deposited into a standard belt account. From there they moved, and this was where it got interesting. Small transfers, routed through three different banking nodes, all ending up in an escrow account registered to a company called Archway Systems. Archway Systems. Earth registered, Luna offices, belt operations. Their public filings described them as a research and development firm specializing in materials, science, and deep space survey technology. The kind of company that could mean anything or nothing. Miller dug deeper. Archway's corporate structure was a maze of holding companies and subsidiaries, the kind of arrangement that existed for one reason only, to make it very hard to figure out who was actually in charge. But money didn't lie, and shell companies still had bank accounts, and bank accounts had patterns. The pattern told a story. Archway Systems had been quietly purchasing prospecting data for the Hungaria asteroid group for the past 2 years. Survey results, mineral assays, navigational charts. They'd bought everything available, from every source, paying above market rate. Then, 18 months ago, the purchases stopped. Whatever they'd been looking for, they'd found it. And 6 months after that, Ravi Okonkwo appeared on Ganymede with a fresh identity and a mission to get himself onto a prospecting vessel working that exact region. It wasn't hard to see the shape of it. Archway found something in the survey data. Something they didn't want anyone else to find. They sent people to study it quietly. But Captain Reyes and the Pale Morning stumbled into the same patch of rock, and suddenly there was a problem. Miller expanded his search. The Pale Morning wasn't the first ship to have trouble in that area. Over the past 14 months, three other prospectors had reported anomalies in the Hungaria group. One had suffered a navigational system failure that sent it drifting off course. Another had experienced a communications blackout lasting 6 days. The third had simply vanished. No distress beacon, no wreckage, no trace. Three incidents in 14 months, all in the same sparse region of the belt that wasn't supposed to contain anything worth looking at. That wasn't bad luck. That was a perimeter. Someone was guarding something, and they were willing to let people die to keep it hidden. Miller saved the data, packaged it, and considered his options. He could warn them, send another anonymous packet, lay out the pattern of disappearances, tell them about Archway's systematic acquisition of survey data, and the shell company maze that hid whoever was pulling the strings. Give them the full picture so they could make an informed decision. But Miller knew Holden. He'd known Holden since before Eros, since before everything changed. Holden would go anyway. He'd go because it was the right thing to do, and because there were dead people who deserved answers. So Miller sent the data. All of it. The corporate records, the pattern of incidents, the vanished ships, and he added one line at the end. They'll be waiting for you. Be ready. Then he turned his attention back to Archway Systems and began looking for the one thing that corporate mazes were designed to hide. Not what they were doing. He already knew that. The question was who? Someone had signed the order. Someone had authorized the money. Someone, sitting in an office on Luna or Earth or Mars, had looked at the problem of innocent people discovering something they shouldn't have, and had decided that the solution was murder. Miller was going to find that person. It was what he did. It was the only thing he had left. On the fourth day, Naomi found it. The Rocinante was running quiet, the way Alex liked to say it, like a hole in space. Passive sensors only, drive output throttled to minimum, the ship drifting through the Hungaria group on the momentum of their initial burn. If anyone was watching this patch of belt, Holden wanted to be invisible for as long as possible. It didn't work. Nothing ever worked the way he wanted it to, but it bought them time, and time was what they needed. There, Naomi said, and put it on the main display. The crew gathered around the holographic field. Nobody spoke. Nobody needed to. The thing on the screen did its own talking. It hung in the dark between two unremarkable asteroids, anchored to nothing, orbiting nothing, simply existing in a place where nothing should exist. The sensors couldn't get a precise read because the surface did something strange to the return signals, scattering them in ways that made the computer uncertain about where the object ended and the vacuum began. But even with uncertain edges, the shape was clear. It was not natural. No asteroid tumbled into those proportions. No collision or accretion process produced those clean lines, those deliberate angles, that sense of intention frozen in metal or stone or whatever it was made of. It looked like a cathedral that someone had dropped into the void and forgotten about for a very long time.
Jesus, Alex whispered.
Seconded, Amos said.
Holden stared at it and felt something shift in his chest. He'd seen alien technology before. He'd walked through the ring station. He'd stood in the presence of things that defied human understanding. But those had always felt connected to something, part of a system, pieces of a puzzle that humanity was slowly learning to read. This felt different. This felt alone. Whatever had built this thing, it wasn't the protomolecules' creators. It wasn't the ring builders. Kaminsky had been right about the materials. Even at this distance, the spectral analysis showed compositions that didn't match any known alien technology. This was something else entirely, built by hands that had never touched a ring gate, never launched a protomolecule, never done any of the things that had reshaped human civilization over the past decades. Something had existed before the ring builders. Something had built things and left them floating in the dark, and then that something had gone away, or died, or transformed into whatever came next. And nobody had known. Until a prospector named Reyes had pointed her survey scanner at the wrong patch of empty space and found it.
I'm reading recent activity, Naomi said, her voice steady the way it got when she was processing something enormous by focusing on the details, power signatures, low level but consistent. Someone has equipment running on or near the structure.
Archway's people, Holden said.
Has to be. I'm also picking up debris consistent with a temporary habitat module. Looks like it was anchored to the surface for an extended period and then removed. Attachment points are still visible.
They were living on that thing, Alex said.
For months, from the look of it. Whatever they were studying, they were thorough.
Amos had moved to the weapons console. He hadn't been asked to. He didn't need to be.
No ships on scope, he said.
But Miller's message said they'd be waiting for us.
They might not know we're here yet, Naomi said. We came in cold and quiet.
Or they're watching us right now and deciding what to do about it, Amos said.
He said it without anxiety, just professional assessment.
Holden made a decision. It was the same decision he always made, the one that had nearly gotten him killed a dozen times and saved the world at least twice. The decision that drove Naomi crazy and made Amos smile, and made Alex shake his head and fly the ship anyway.
We go in, he said.
Alex, bring us alongside. Slow approach. Standard docking distance. Naomi, record everything. Full spectrum. Every sensor we have. Continuous feed to our external data cache.
If they shoot at us, the data cache won't matter much, Alex said.
If they shoot at us, it means they have something worth shooting for. And everything we've recorded will already be transmitting to the nearest comm relay.
Alex looked at him. So we're the canary.
We're always the canary. At least this time we know it going in.
Naomi was already setting up the recording array. I'm also queuing a tight beam to Tycho with everything Miller sent us.
The corporate records, the missing ships, all of it? If anything happens to us, Fred Johnson gets the package in 6 hours.
Good. Good.
The Rocinante crept forward, her maneuvering thrusters firing in small, precise bursts, closing the distance between them and the oldest thing any human being had ever seen. Through the cockpit windows, the structure grew from a shape on a screen to a presence in the dark.
Up close it was worse. Or better. Holden wasn't sure which. The surface wasn't smooth the way it had looked from a distance. It was covered in patterns, dense and recursive, like circuitry or writing or art or something that was all three at once. They spiraled and branched and folded back on themselves in ways that made his eyes want to slide away. Not because they were ugly, but because they contained too much information for a human brain to process in a single glance.
Are those symbols? Alex asked. Maybe, Naomi said. Or maybe that's just what it looks like from the outside. Could be structural. Could be decorative. Could be something we don't have a word for.
Amos leaned forward. Looks like writing to me.
They all turned to look at him. Amos shrugged.
What? I grew up in Baltimore. I know graffiti when I see it.
Holden looked back at the structure, at the dense spiraling patterns that covered every surface, and thought about what it meant if Amos was right. If someone, something, unimaginably long ago, had carved a message into the side of a building and left it floating in the dark for someone to find.
Naomi, he said, make sure we get all of it, every centimeter.
Already on it.
The Rocinante held position, a small human thing beside an ancient alien one. Amos had never liked Eva. It wasn't fear. Amos didn't experience fear the way other people did. The same way he didn't experience a lot of things the way other people did.
Floating in a vacuum, tethered to nothing, trusting your life to a suit that was one micrometeorite away from becoming a very expensive coffin.
But nobody else was going, so he went. Alex stayed on the Rocinante, hands on the controls, ready to pull them out if everything went sideways. Naomi monitored from ops, feeding them telemetry and keeping the recording array locked on every surface the cameras could see. Holden had wanted to come. Of course he had. Holden always wanted to be in the middle of things. But someone needed to stay on the ship and make the hard calls if the hard calls needed making. And that was Holden's job whether he liked it or not. So it was Amos, alone in his suit, crossing the gap between the Rocinante and the oldest thing in the universe. The structure grew as he approached, and growing was the right word for it. It didn't just get bigger. It got more real, more present. Like it had been waiting there at the edge of perception, and closing the distance was what made it decide to exist properly. The surface was something else. Up close, the patterns he'd called graffiti from the cockpit were deeper and more complex than anything he'd been ready for. They weren't carved into the surface. They were the surface, built into the material, at a level that made the line between structure and decoration meaningless. Amos ran his gloved hand over one of the spiraling grooves, and felt nothing through the suit's haptic feedback. Either the patterns were too shallow for the sensors, or they were doing something his suit couldn't measure.
You getting this? He said.
Every bit of it, Naomi answered. The spectral analysis is going crazy. The surface composition changes every few meters. It's like the whole thing is made of different materials woven together.
Fancy, Todd.
He found the airlock, or what he assumed was an airlock. A rectangular opening, 3 meters tall, too wide, set into the surface where two pattern fields met. The edges were clean and precise in a way that no human tool could have produced. There was no door, no mechanism he could see, just an opening into darkness.
I'm going in, he said.
Amos, that was Holden.
Yeah, Cap?
Be careful. Amos didn't laugh, but he wanted to. Being careful was what other people did when they didn't know what they were walking into. Amos preferred being ready. There was a difference. He switched on his helmet lance and floated through the opening. Inside, the dark was absolute. His lights carved tunnels through it, illuminating surfaces that drank the light instead of reflecting it. The walls, if they were walls, curved away in all directions, and the patterns from the outside continued here, denser and more intricate, rutting along every surface like the nervous system of something vast and sleeping. The space was larger than it should have been. That was the first thing that didn't add up. From outside, the structure was maybe 200 meters long. But the interior space he was floating through felt bigger than that. A lot bigger. His suit's rangefinder gave readings that didn't match the external dimensions, and when he reported this, Naomi went quiet for a long time.
That's not possible, she said finally.
And yet, Amos said, echoing something Holden had said earlier. He found the camp 30 meters in, or rather, he found what was left of it. A temporary habitat module had been anchored to the floor,
its connection points still visible as clean holes drilled into the ancient surface. Power cables snaked along the walls, secured with adhesive mounts. A portable fusion generator sat in one corner, cold but intact. Work lights had been mounted on adjustable stands. Sample containers, empty, were stacked in neat rows. Someone had lived here, worked here, studied this place for weeks, maybe months, with the methodical patience of people who knew what they'd found and wanted to understand it before anyone else could. Unseeing equipment, Amos reported. Habitat was here, pulled out. Generator, lights, sample containers. Whoever was here, they weren't in a hurry when they left. This is a clean extraction, not a bug out. They finished what they came to do, Holden said. Or they got what they needed and pulled back to a safe distance. Safe from what? Amos looked deeper into the structure, past the camp, into the dark that his lights couldn't quite reach. Don't know yet. He moved past the abandoned equipment, deeper into the alien space. His suit's atmospheric sensors were reading vacuum, which made sense. No sealed compartments, no atmosphere retention. Just empty space shaped by hands that were dust before Earth had multicellular life. Then, he found the room. It wasn't really a room. It was a space where the patterns converged, spiraling inward from every wall and ceiling and floor, until they met at a single point in the center. The convergence point was a raised platform, 2 meters across, perfectly circular. The patterns flowed up its sides like water running uphill and met at the top in a design so dense that his cameras couldn't resolve it. On the platform, someone had left equipment. Not abandoned equipment, placed equipment. Precise, deliberate, aimed at the convergence point like instruments aimed at a specimen. I'm looking at some kind of scanning array, Amos said, high-end stuff. Something Can you access any of it? Naomi asked. Amos floated closer. The equipment was still powered, running on its own battery packs. Status lights blinked in the dark. Whatever data these instruments had been collecting, they were still collecting. It's still running, he said. Batteries are at 40%. They left this here on purpose. Like a monitoring station, Naomi said. Yeah. They pulled their people out, but they left the instruments watching. Whatever this convergence point is, they want to know if it does something. Amos looked at the platform, at the impossible density of patterns flowing to its center, at the instruments that someone had aimed at it with the careful precision of people who were afraid of what they might record. Naomi, he said, I'm going to pull the data storage from these instruments, everything they've recorded. Do it. He reached for the nearest analyzer, found the data module, and pulled it. Got them all. Heading back. He turned away from the convergence point and the watching instruments. Behind him, in the dark, the patterns continued their ancient spiraling conversation, and the empty platform waited for whatever came next. Amos didn't look back. He'd learned a long time ago, in a place much worse than this, that looking back at things you couldn't change was a waste of time. The Rocinante's airlock was a small, warm square of light in the void, and he headed for it with the steady efficiency of a man who had done his job and was ready for someone else to figure out what it meant. The data module sat on the ops deck table like unexploded ordnance, 5 small black rectangles, each the size of a playing card, each containing whatever Archway Systems had spent months trying to understand. Amos had brought them back along with a description of the derelict's interior that made Holden's skin crawl. Interior dimensions that didn't match the exterior. Patterns that converged on a single point. Instruments left behind like sentries at a post. Still watching. Still recording. The interfaces are standard, Naomi said, turning one of the modules over in her hands. Commercial scientific instruments, nothing custom. Can you read them? Already am. She slotted the first module into the Rocinante's secondary data terminal, the one they used for quarantined inputs. Nothing from the derelict was going near the main systems until they knew what they were dealing with. Data scrolled across the display. Months of it. Spectral readings, electromagnetic field measurements, thermal profiles, radiation counts. The instruments had been thorough, recording everything on repeating cycles, building a picture of the convergence point one measurement at a time. "This is a research station's worth of data," Naomi said. They had a full science team here. "What were they studying?" Naomi was quiet for a moment, reading. Then she made a sound that Holden had learned to associate with her finding something she didn't expect. "The convergence point," she said, "where all the patterns meet. It's not just decorative. It's active." "Active how?" "It's emitting. Very low power, very specific frequencies, cycling through a pattern that repeats every 16 hours. The research team documented over 30 complete cycles. They're all identical." "A signal," Holden said. "Maybe. Or maybe it's more like a heartbeat. A system check." Alex drifted over from the pilot station. Something that old shouldn't still be running. Power sources don't last that long. Nothing lasts that long. "Unless it's drawing power from something we can't detect," Naomi said. "Or unless our understanding of power sources is limited to what we built and what the ring builders built. This is something else entirely." She loaded the second module. More data. This time it included annotations. "Dr. Elera Vasquez Shen, lead researcher, Archway Advanced Studies Division, Naomi Reed. She's meticulous. Every observation logged, every anomaly noted." "What? Anomalies?" Naomi scrolled through the notes, her expression changed, shifted, settled into something that Holden recognized as controlled alarm. "On day 47 of their study, the emission pattern changed. Not the frequency or the power level, the content. Dr. Vasquez Chen describes it as if the signal became aware of them." The ops deck went silent. Even Amos, who had been leaning against the bulkhead with his arms crossed, straightened up. "Aware," Holden repeated. "Her word, not mine. She writes that the emission pattern shifted from a simple repeating cycle to something more complex. Longer sequences, more variation, but still structured. She believed the convergence point was responding to their presence." "Responding how? Communicating?" "She didn't know. The third module might tell us more." Naomi loaded it. The data from this period was different. The clean, measured readings from the first two modules gave way to something more frantic. Sample rates increased. New instruments came online. The team was scrambling to capture everything they could. "Day 52. Naomi read. The emission pattern expanded. New frequencies. Harmonics that the original instruments weren't calibrated to detect. Dr. Vasquez Chen requisitioned additional equipment from their support ship." "They had a support ship?" "Parked 2,000 kilometers out. Running supplies and rotating personnel." "And then?" Day 61. Naomi paused. When she spoke again, her voice had the careful steadiness it took on when she was processing something that scared her. "The convergence point produced what she calls a coherent information structure, not a signal. Not a heartbeat, a message."
"What did it say?"
"She couldn't decode it. The information density was beyond anything their equipment could parse. But she describes it as layered, multiple channels of data, interwoven. Each one complex enough to be a language of its own. She compared it to trying to read a book where every letter is also a book." Holden looked at the data streaming across the display. Numbers and waveforms and spectral analyses, all pointing at the same conclusion. Something in that structure was talking. Had been talking, maybe, for billions of years. And when someone finally showed up to listen, it had noticed, and it had started saying something new. "The fourth module," Naomi said, her voice quiet now. "Day 68. She loaded it. The data cut off abruptly. The last timestamp was 3 seconds after midnight on a date 7 months ago. Every instrument stopped recording at the same moment.
"Power failure?" Alex asked.
"No. The instruments were still running when Amos found them. Batteries at 40%, they didn't lose power."
pulled the plug.
Pulled the plug, packed up the habitat, extracted their entire team, and left the instruments running on passive collection only.
In 3 seconds.
That's not an orderly withdrawal. That's panic.
The fifth module was different. It wasn't data from the instruments. It was a single file, recorded separately, tagged with Dr. Vasquez Chen's personal encryption key.
Naomi broke it in 12 minutes.
It was a voice recording.
"If anyone finds this," the recording began.
A woman's voice, steady but tight, the sound of someone holding herself together through professional discipline.
"Do not activate the convergence point. Do not attempt to respond to the emission pattern. It is not a message for us. We are not the intended recipients. We do not know who or what is, but the information structure produced on day 61 contain navigational data.
Coordinates.
Wherever it was sending that message, it was pointing at something beyond the gates. Beyond anything we've mapped."
A pause. A breath.
"The research team has been extracted. Archway has classified everything. I'm leading this recording because I believe classification is the wrong response to what we've found. But I also believe that what's in that structure is dangerous in ways we don't understand yet. Whoever finds this, be very careful. And be very, very quiet."
The recording ended.
Holden stood in the silence that followed, and felt the familiar weight of knowing something that changed everything. He'd been here before.
Cluck.
Every time the universe had handed him something too big for any one person to hold, and every time, he'd done the only thing he knew how to do.
He looked at his crew. Naomi's jaw was set. Alex had gone pale. Amos was perfectly still.
"Well, Holden said. "Now we know why they killed Captain Reyes."
Alex felt it before he saw it. A change in the texture of the space around them. The way a pilot could feel turbulence before the instruments registered it. Something in the pattern of background radiation, or the faint whisper of distant drives, or some instinct that 30 years of flying had wired into his nervous system. He was at the pilot station, running through post-EVA systems checks while Holden and Naomi argued about what to do with Dr. Vasquez Chen's recording. Amos was in the machine shop, cleaning the EVA suit with the careful attention he gave to all his equipment. The Rocinante hummed around them. Quiet and patient, holding position beside the derelict like a guard dog at a sleeping giant's feet.
"Hey," Alex said, "y'all might want to see this."
He put the long-range sensor display on the main screen. Three contacts, coming out of the clutter of the Hungaria Group's asteroid field.
"How long?" Holden asked.
"At their current burn, about 5 hours. But they're decelerating. They know where they're going. That's not a search pattern, that's a direct approach."
Naomi was at the tactical display in 3 seconds. "Transponders?"
"Dark. No transponder, no IF beacon, no active emissions except their drives. They're running quiet, just not as quiet as us."
"Military?"
Alex studied the drive signatures, the way each ship's plume flickered and pulsed. Every drive had a personality, and Alex had spent a career learning to read them.
"No. Military ships have clean burns, matched drives, synchronized output. These are commercial vessels with aftermarket modifications. Good ones, but not Navy. Corporate security, maybe. Private contract."
"Archway's people," Holden said.
"Has to be. Three ships, running dark, heading straight for coordinates that aren't in any public database.
They're probably monitoring their instruments remotely," Naomi said. "When Amos pulled the data modules, it might have triggered an alert."
Amos's voice came over the ship-wide. He'd been listening.
"So I tripped an alarm. Great."
"You did what we needed you to do," Holden said. "We have the data. That's what matters."
"What also matters," Alex said, "is three ships with no transponders coming at us in a place where ships have a habit of disappearing. Just saying."
Holden looked at the display. Alex could see the calculation happening behind his eyes. The same calculation that always happened. The one where Holden weighed doing the right thing against getting his crew killed and somehow always came down on the same side.
"How fast can we run?" Holden asked.
"If I light the drive right now, full burn,
we can be outside their intercept envelope in about 90 minutes. They're carrying more mass than us. The Rossi is faster than anything that isn't purpose-built military. Can we get far enough to reach a comm relay? Broadcast everything? Already in range of two relays, I can hit the Tycho relay and the Ceres relay simultaneously. Naomi already queued a data package. Then we have options. We always have options, Captain. Some of them are just better than others. Holden turned to Naomi. How much of the data have you processed? Maybe 40%. The voice recording is complete. All five data modules are copied to our systems. I need another few hours to fully analyze everything, but we have enough to tell the story. Tell it to everyone. There it was. The decision Alex had been waiting for. The one Holden always made. The one that made Alex want to grab him by the shoulders and shake some sense into him, and also the one that made Alex proud to fly his ship. Open broadcast? Alex asked, already knowing the answer. Open broadcast. Wideband, every frequency, every relay in range. The coordinates, the derelict, the archway connection, the missing ships. Let the whole system hear what that woman had to say. They'll know exactly where we are, Alex pointed out. They already know where we are, but once this goes out, killing us doesn't help them anymore. The information is free. You can't put it back. Naomi was already at the comm station, compiling the broadcast package now. Everything Miller sent us, everything Kaminsky told us, the data from the derelict, the voice recording. Include sensor readings of the approaching ships, Holden said. Let people know that three unidentified vessels converged on us the moment we found what Archway was hiding. That's going to make some people very angry, Alex said. Good. Quo. Alex watched the three contacts on his display. They were still burning, still closing. Long enough to broadcast everything, long enough to run, long enough for whatever was going to happen to start happening. He put his hands on the controls. The Rocinante responded like she always did, like an extension of his own body, ready to fly or fight or run at his command. Naomi, he said, send the broadcast. I'll keep us alive while the system decides what to do about it. Naomi hit the transmit key. The data went out, screaming across the void at the speed of light, spreading in all directions, unstoppable and irreversible. 300 years of human spaceflight, and the most dangerous weapon in the universe was still information traveling at the speed of light. Alex smiled. It wasn't a happy smile. It was the smile of a man who knew that the next few hours were going to be very interesting, and who intended to be alive at the end of them. All right, Rossi, he said quietly, just to the ship. Let's go to work. The broadcast went out at 1942 Universal. By 1943, the first responses started coming in. By 1945, the system was on fire. Holden watched it happen from the ops deck, the same way he'd watched it happen before. The initial burst of confusion. The silence from official channels that meant governments were scrambling to figure out what to say. And underneath it all, the steady, unstoppable spread of information through the network, copied and recopied and cached and archived and shared until no power in the solar system could make it disappear. He'd done this before. He'd been the one to tell the system about the Canterbury, about Eros, about the gates. Every time, it had changed everything. Every time, he'd wondered if it was the right call. And every time, the alternative, letting powerful people keep dangerous secrets, had been worse. Three ships are still closing, Alex reported. No change in approach vector. They know we broadcast. They're coming anyway. Why? Naomi asked from the tactical display. The information is out. Killing us doesn't suppress it anymore. Revenge, Amos said over the shipwide. Or orders that haven't been updated. Or people who don't know how to stop doing what they've been told to do. Or all three, Holden said. Alex, what are our options? Same as before, but better. We've got 5 hours before they're in weapons range. I can run us through the asteroid field, use the rocks for cover.
Their ships are bigger than us and less maneuverable. In a straight line, they're not as fast. In a field, they're not even close. Do it. Get us moving. Don't head for open space yet. Stay in the field where we have the advantage.
Copy that. The Rocinante's drive lit, pushing them away from the derelict on a vector that took them deeper into the Hungaria group's sparse scattering of rocks and ice. Naomi had the tactical display running three projections simultaneously. I'm tracking their formations. Two ships are spreading wide, trying to bracket us. The third is hanging back, different drive signature.
Command ship, Holden said.
Probably. It's also the one with the largest mass. If they're carrying ordnance, that's where it is.
The Rocinante threaded between two tumbling rocks, each the size of a small building. The pursuing ships were visible on the long-range display, two of them arcing wide while the third held steady.
Incoming transmission, Naomi said. Directed at us, tight beam.
Put it on.
A voice filled the ops deck. Male, calm, professional. The voice of someone accustomed to being obeyed.
Rocinante. This is Garza. Security operations for Archway Systems. You are in possession of proprietary research data and have broadcast classified information in violation of multiple corporate confidentiality agreements. Power down your drive and prepare for boarding.
Holden looked at Naomi. She looked back at him with an expression that said she was about as impressed as he was.
Mr. Garza, Holden said, keying the comm. I'm James Holden. You may have heard of me. The information you're calling classified involves the murder of a ship captain, the sabotage of a civilian vessel, and the concealment of a discovery with implications for the entire human race. I don't work for you. I don't recognize your authority, and I'm not powering down anything.
A pause. Then Garza's voice again, still calm but with an edge underneath.
Captain Holden, the ships accompanying me are armed. If you do not comply, we will disable your vessel and recover our property by force.
Your property is currently being read by every newsfeed in the system. You can't recover it from the whole solar system, Garza. But you're welcome to try.
He cut the channel.
That went well, Alex said.
He's going to shoot at us.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying the conversation went well. The shooting part is going to be less fun.
The two flanking ships were accelerating. They'd given up on the wide bracket and were closing directly, burning harder than was smart in an asteroid field. That told Holden something important.
These weren't Navy.
Navy ships in an asteroid field moved carefully, used the terrain, took their time. These pilots were aggressive, but not disciplined. Corporate security with military hardware, but not military training.
EDZs warming up on the lead ships, Naomi reported. No torpedo signatures yet.
They want to disable us, not destroy us, Holden said. They still think they can contain this.
That's a nice thought. Unfortunately for them.
The first ship came into PDC range. Holden felt the Rocinante shudder as Alex threw them into a hard lateral burn, using a nearby asteroid as cover.
Rounds streaked past, bright tracers in the dark, chewing into rock instead of hull.
Alex, Holden said.
I see it. I see everything.
Alex's hands were moving across the controls, and the Rocinante danced. There was no other word for it. She slid between rocks, spun on her axis, burned hard and cut thrust, and burned again in patterns that no targeting computer could predict because they weren't patterns at all. They were Alex Kamau flying by feel, reading the space around him the way a fish reads water.
Naomi, return fire. PDCs only.
Targeting drives. Firing dot wall. The Rocinante's point defense cannons opened up, and the first pursuing ship took hits along its engine housing. Not crippling, but enough to force a course correction. To break its pursuit and send it tumbling sideways as the pilot fought for control.
One down, two to go, Naomi said.
The second ship was smarter. It held back, using the first ship's mistake as a lesson, keeping rocks between it and the Rocinante. But Alex had been fighting in asteroid fields since before these pilots had their licenses.
Hold on.
Alex said. Then the Rocinante flipped, burning retrograde and dropped below the plane of the field. The pursuing ship, committed to its approach vector, overshot. By the time it corrected, Alex had put 3 kilometers and 2 large rocks between them.
Garza's command ship is holding position, Naomi said, not engaging.
Smart. He's watching, letting his dogs do the work.
His dogs aren't doing very well.
The first ship was drifting, drive damaged, trying to effect repairs. The second was circling, looking for an angle that didn't exist, because Alex kept taking it away.
He's going to call for reinforcements, Holden said, if he hasn't already.
Probably, but our broadcast is out there. Whoever he calls, they're going to have to decide if they want to be part of a story that the whole system is already watching.
Holden nodded. The broadcast was the weapon, the Rocinante was the shield. And time was on their side, because every minute that passed was another minute the information spread, another copy cached, another voice asking questions that Archway systems didn't want answered.
Alex, keep us moving. Naomi, keep broadcasting. Every new scan of the derelict, every piece of data we pull from those modules, send it out. Don't let the story go quiet.
Never does, Naomi said. Not when you start it. Holden didn't smile. People had died for this information. A captain named Reyes, floating cold in the Rocinante's cargo hold, had died so that someone could keep a secret. Now the secret was out, and the people who'd kept it were trying to kill his crew, and somewhere in the dark behind them, an ancient structure was still sending its message to whoever was meant to hear it. He put his hand on the comm console and opened a channel to the entire system.
This is James Holden of the Rocinante. We are currently under fire from Archway Systems security forces for the crime of telling the truth. Everything we found is in the broadcast. The data is real. The derelict is real. The murder of Captain Elena Reyes is real. Decide for yourselves what that means.
He closed the channel and turned back to the display, where 3 ships moved through the dark, and the oldest message in the universe continued to speak to an empty room. Flying in an asteroid field was like playing chess in a hurricane. The pieces kept moving, and so did the board, and the only advantage you had was being smaller and faster and better than everyone who was trying to kill you.
Alex was all 3.
The Rocinante slid between 2 tumbling carbonaceous chondrites, each one dark as coal and roughly the shape of a clenched fist. The gap between them was maybe 80 meters. The ship was 60 watt. Alex threaded it at full lateral thrust, feeling the Rossi shutter as proximity alert screamed and then went quiet.
That was tight, Amos said from the weapons console.
That was beautiful, Alex corrected. The second pursuing ship had found its nerve again. It was coming in fast from the starboard side, using a chain of larger asteroids as cover, trying to get close enough for a clean PDC solution. The pilot was decent. Not great, but decent. They knew how to use terrain, and they knew how to manage their approach vector dot dot. What they didn't know was Alex. He'd grown up on Mars, learned to fly in the Mariner Valley, where the canyons were so deep and narrow that a bad turn meant a funeral. He'd flown combat sorties in the Makrian. He'd taken the Rocinante through ring space, through gates, through things that weren't supposed to be possible. Every one of those flights had taught him something, and every one of those lessons was running in his head right now. A library of experience that no corporate security pilot could match.
He's closing, Naomi reported. 800 meters, 600.
I see him. Alex watched the contact on his display, tracked its trajectory, felt the rhythm of its maneuvering burns. The pilot had a habit, a tell. Every time they corrected course, they overcorrected slightly to starboard. Just a touch. Just enough to notice if you were looking.
Alex was always looking.
He waited. The pursuing ship came around the edge of a large nickel-iron asteroid, committed to its approach. At 300 meters, it opened up with PDCs, rounds cutting through the vacuum and bright lines. Alex rolled the Rocinante 90 degrees and burned straight down relative to the ecliptic. The PDC rounds passed through the space where they'd been a half second earlier. The pursuing ship tried to follow, correcting its course and overcorrecting to starboard, just like Alex knew it would.
Naomi now. The Rocinante's PDZ's fired, not at the ship, at the asteroid beside it. The rounds chewed it into the surface, blasting debris outward in a cloud of rock and metal fragments. The pursuing ship flew straight into the debris field at full speed. The pilot was good enough to not die. Barely. Emergency thrust, full lateral, shields taking the smaller impacts while the hull groaned under the larger ones. But by the time they cleared the debris, their drive was sputtering, and their PDC tracking had gone offline. Second ship disabled, Naomi said. Drive output at maybe 30%, they're not chasing anyone. That's what we call flying, Naomi. That's what we call showing off, Alex. He grinned. Fair enough. Garza's command ship was still holding position at the edge of the field. It hadn't moved. Hadn't fired. Just sat there, watching, as Alex dismantled its escorts. That was either very patient, or very stupid. Garza's ship is powering up weapons, Naomi reported. Full suite. Not just PDS. I'm reading missile tubes. Looks like 6. Maybe 8. Not stupid then, patient. He let his escort ships test us, Holden said. Now he knows what we can do. And he's got torpedoes, Alex said. In an asteroid field, torpedoes are tricky. They track heat, and every rock in this field has a thermal signature from solar heating. Lots of false targets. But if he gets close enough, the tracking algorithms can sort us from the background. So we don't let him get close enough. Alex studied the field around them. The Hungaria group was sparse compared to the main belt, but sparse was relative. There were thousands of rocks in sensor range, each one a potential obstacle or a potential shield. The trick was knowing which ones to use and when. I'm going to take us deeper, he said. Into the densest part of the field. More rocks, more cover, harder for torpedoes to track. His ship is bigger than us. At some point, the gaps between rocks get too tight for him to follow. Do it, Holden said. The Rocinante burned hard, diving into the thickening asteroid field like a fish fleeing into a coral reef. Behind them, Garza's command ship followed, but slower, more cautious. It was a big ship, corporate modified freighter class, and the gaps that the Rocinante could thread without thinking required careful navigation for something its size. He's falling behind, Naomi said, but he's launched, 4 missiles in the void. I see them, 4 hot points of light on the display, accelerating, spreading into a fan pattern to cover his possible escape vectors, smart deployment. The missiles would sweep the field, herding the Rocinante toward a kill zone or forcing them into the open. Alex thought about it for exactly 1 second, then he did something that no reasonable pilot would do. He cut the drive. The Rocinante went cold and dark. No thrust, no emissions, no heat signature. Just a metal shape, drifting among a thousand other metal shapes in the dark. Alex, Holden's voice was very controlled. Trust me. The missiles swept past. Their targeting systems scanned the field, looking for the heat bloom of a ship's drive. They found nothing. One by one, the missiles lost lock. Their onboard AI cycled through targeting protocols, found nothing that matched, and went to default search patterns. 2 of them acquired asteroids and detonated uselessly against stone. The other 2 flew past the Rocinante at 60 meters, close enough that Alex could feel the vibration of their passage through the hull. Then they were gone, spent and wasted, and Alex lit the drive again. That, Amos said, was the dumbest thing I have ever seen anyone do. And I've watched Holden do things. Did it work? Yeah, it worked. Then it wasn't dumb. Garza's command ship was alone now. 2 escorts disabled, 4 missiles wasted. The realization that the Rocinante wasn't just a freighter they could bully into compliance. Garza's pulling back, Naomi said. He's breaking off. Alex watched the command ship's drive signature change, the ship decelerating and turning, heading away from the field. Not running. Retreating.
"He'll be back," Alex said, "with more ships."
"By then it won't matter," Holden said. "The broadcast is everywhere."
Alex leaned back in his chair and rested his hands on the arms. The Rocinante hummed beneath him, warm and alive and whole. He ran his hand along the console, the way you'd stroke a horse after a hard ride.
"Good girl," he said. "Just to her. Just between them."
While Alex flew, Naomi worked. She had the Rocinante's full processing power routed to the secondary data terminal, every spare cycle dedicated to cracking the remaining data from the derelict's monitoring station. The ship shuddered around her as Alex threaded them through the asteroid field, but Naomi had learned years ago to tune out everything that wasn't her problem. The first three data modules had told them what the Archway team had found. The convergence point, the emissions, the moment the structure had seemed to notice it was being watched. The fourth module's abrupt cutoff told them how the team had responded, with fear, with retreat. The fifth module, Dr. Vasquez Chen's voice recording told them why. But the recording was a summary. The real data, the raw numbers, was in the files Naomi was still processing, and the deeper she went, the more she understood why Archway had tried to bury all of it. The emission pattern from the convergence point wasn't random. It wasn't a heartbeat or a system check. It was structured information, dense and layered, encoded in ways that no human language or mathematical system had ever used. But structure was structure. Patterns were patterns. She started with the simplest layer. The emission operated on multiple frequencies simultaneously, and the lowest frequency carried what appeared to be spatial data. Not the kind humans used, not stellar cartography or navigational waypoints. These were positional references in a framework that Naomi didn't recognize. But the mathematical relationships between the data points were clear enough to map. She mapped them. The result appeared on her display, and Naomi's breath stopped. It was a map. A map of the local stellar neighborhood extending outward roughly 1,000 light years in every direction. Not a human map, not drawn from human survey data. This was a map made by someone who had looked at these same stars from a different perspective, millions or billions of years ago, and had encoded their positions with a precision that made human astronomy look like cave paintings. "Holden," she said, "you need to see this." He came over, bracing himself against the wall as Alex threw the ship into another evasion. The display filled his vision. "What am I looking at?" "A star map, encoded in the lowest frequency layer of the convergence point's emission. Whoever built that structure mapped the stars around us, 1,000 light years in every direction." "That's remarkable but not terrifying. Why did the Archway team run?" "Because of what's marked on the map. Died what?" She highlighted the data points. Scattered across the star map, dozens of them, were locations tagged with additional data. Each tag contained the same encoded structure. A pattern that repeated identically at every marked location. "These marks," Naomi said, "they're not stars. They're not planets. They're positions in interstellar space. Empty space, as far as we know. But whoever made this map thought they were important enough to mark." "What are they?" "I think they're more of these structures, more derelicts. Dozens of them scattered across 1,000 light years, each one mapped and tagged in this emission pattern." Holden was quiet for a moment. Naomi could feel him processing it, the same way she had, the same way anyone would when they realized that the one impossible thing they'd found was actually one of many. "There's more," she said. "The higher frequency layers. I've only decoded fragments. But Dr. Vasquez Chen was right. There's navigational data, not just positions, but vectors, directions. Each tagged location has an associated direction, pointing outward, away from the galactic core, toward something."
"Toward what?"
"I don't know. The data doesn't say. Or if it does, it's in a layer I haven't decoded yet. But every single marker points outward, and the vectors converge. They all point at the same region of space, roughly 12,000 light years away. Beyond the gates. Far beyond the gates,
far beyond anything humanity has reached or could reach with current technology. Whatever built these structures was pointing at something out there, and they built dozens of beacons to make sure the directions survive. A warning, Holden said. Or an invitation, or both. A message that says here is where we are, here is what we built, and here is where you should look if you want to understand why. The Rocinante shuddered again. Alex was swearing quietly at the helm, threading between rocks while the disabled escort ship tried one last time to get a targeting solution. Naomi filed the combat away in the back of her mind and focused on the data. There's one more thing, she said. The pattern change that Dr. Vasquez Chen documented, when the emission shifted from repeating cycles to complex sequences, I've compared the before and after data. And? The simple repeating pattern was the map. Just the map, broadcasting on a loop. The complex pattern that started when the research team arrived, that was the map plus something else. A new layer. Something that wasn't being broadcast before. It was responding to them. It was responding to someone being there to listen. The structure detected the presence of intelligent observers and activated a secondary information layer. One that was dormant until someone came looking. What's in the secondary layer? Naomi hesitated. She'd been chewing on this for the past 20 minutes, running the numbers, checking and rechecking, hoping she was wrong. Instructions, she said. I think the secondary layer contains instructions. For building something. Dimensions, materials, sequences. It's a blueprint. A blueprint for what? I don't know. Something complex. Something that would take, at a rough estimate, the combined industrial output of a solar system to build. Sheep. The place where all those vectors are pointing. Holden looked at the star map on the display, at the dozens of markers scattered across 1,000 light years, at the converging vectors that pointed at something impossibly far away. They didn't just leave a message, he said. They left a test. If you're smart enough to find the structure, you're smart enough to read the map. And if you're smart enough to read the map, maybe you're smart enough to build what they're asking you to build. That's one interpretation. What's the other? That whatever killed them, whatever wiped them out so completely that even the ring builders never knew they existed, is at the other end of those vectors. And the structures aren't beacons, they're bait. The ship fell silent except for the hum of the drive and the distant pop of PDC fire. Naomi watched Holden's face as he processed it, watched the weight of it settle on him the way it always did. He carried things, it was his nature. Other people could set things down. Holden never could. Send it, he said. All of it. The map, the vectors, the blueprint data, everything. Add it to the broadcast. That's a lot of information to hand to a system that might not be ready for it. They'll never be ready. Nobody's ever ready, send it anyway. Naomi sent it. The data went out, joining the rest of the broadcast in its expansion across the solar system. A star map made by the dead. A set of directions to somewhere humans couldn't reach. And the blueprint for something that might be a bridge or a trap, left by hands that had been dust before the dinosaurs walked on Earth. She looked at the data one more time, at the converging vectors, at the vast silence they pointed toward. Then she closed the file and turned to help Alex fly. Some questions were too big to answer in an asteroid field, but they'd been asked, and that was what mattered. The network was full of Holden's broadcast. Every relay, every data cache, every newsfeed was carrying it. The derelict, the data, the archway connection. Miller could feel it spreading the way you could feel rain on your face. Each drop a copy, each puddle a mirror reflecting the same truth in a slightly different direction. It was good work. Holden had always been good at that part, the part where you took the thing no one wanted to see and held it up where everyone had to look. Miller had never had the stomach for it. He was a detective, not a prophet. What people did with them afterward was their problem. But today, he had one more thing to find. Garza's command ship had pulled back from the asteroid field, and its communications were running hot. Encrypted channels. Rapid-fire exchanges, the digital equivalent of panic.
Archway Systems was scrambling to contain the damage, and their security chief was calling everyone he could think of for help. Miller was listening. He'd been listening since Holden's first broadcast, threading himself through the network relays that carried Archway's communications. The encryption was military grade, which meant it was hard to crack from the outside. But Miller wasn't on the outside. He was in the network, part of the network, a pattern of electrons that could go anywhere data could go. He slipped into Archway's communication stream like water through a cracked hull. The messages told a story. Garza, furious and professional, reporting the failed interdiction. A voice from Luna, calm and corporate, authorizing escalation. A name finally attached to the authorization. Dr. Soren Adachi, Executive Vice President of Archway Systems Advanced Research Division. The man who had signed the orders that killed Captain Reyes. Miller saved the name, added it to his file, connected it to the money trail, the shell companies, the manufactured identity of Ravi Okonkwo. Every thread led back to Adachi. Every death, every cover-up, every decision to value secrecy over human life, had passed through his office. But Adachi wasn't the immediate problem. The immediate problem was what Garza was doing with his authorization to escalate. Miller watched the command ship's systems light up as new orders went out, not to the disabled escorts, to other ships. Ships that were already in the belt, already nearby, already positioned for exactly this kind of contingency. Archway had assets scattered across the Hungaria group, and Garza was calling them all in. Six ships, maybe more. All converging on the Rocinante's last known position. Miller did the math. The Rocinante was fast, but even Alex couldn't outrun six ships in an asteroid field. Not forever. Not if they coordinated properly. So Miller made a decision. The kind of decision that a detective wasn't supposed to make. The kind that bent the rules and crossed lines and did things that couldn't be undone. But Miller had been dead for years, and the dead had their own rules. He reached into Garza's command ship, not through the communications channel. Through the ship itself. Through the network of computers and controllers and automated systems that made a modern spacecraft work. Every ship was a network, and every network had doors, and Miller had been walking through doors since before his body was dust on Venus. He found the drive controls first. The command ship's reactor was standard Epstein, well-maintained, running clean. Its control software was locked behind multiple firewalls, each one a wall of code designed to keep exactly this kind of intrusion out. Miller went through them the way he went through everything, not with force, with patience, with the steady methodical attention of a man who had nothing left but the work. One by one the firewalls fell, not breached. Understood. Miller read them the way he read crime scenes, finding the patterns, the assumptions, the places where the designers had been clever, but not clever enough. He shut down the drive. Garza's command ship went dark. Its reactor continued running, life support continued, but the Epstein drive spooled down and locked, and no amount of emergency overrides would bring it back. Miller had written himself into the command firmware, a ghost in the machine that no engineer could exercise without physically replacing the hardware. Then he did the same thing to the first escort ship, and the second. The reinforcements were harder. They were still en route, scattered across the field, and each one required Miller to stretch himself further, to be in more places at once, to hold more systems in his mind simultaneously. Not physically, because there was nothing physical left to hurt, but something was degrading. Something in the pattern that was Miller was fraying at the edges, becoming less coherent, less certain of where it ended, and the data began. He did it anyway. Ship by ship, he reached in and turned off their drives. 5, 6, 7 ships, dead in the void. Their crews alive but going nowhere. Garza would be screaming into his comm right now. Demanding explanations, ordering reboots and overrides. None of it would work. Miller had been thorough. He always had been. The effort left him scattered. He could feel himself losing resolution, like a photograph left in the sun. Thoughts that had been sharp were becoming fuzzy. Memories that had been clear were blurring at the edges. He was spending himself, burning through whatever it was that kept him coherent,
and he could feel the end of it approaching the way you could feel the edge of a cliff in the dark.
One more thing. One last act of thoroughness.
Millard gathered what was left of himself and reached into every public database he could touch. Navigational registries, astronomical surveys, academic repositories, open access archives. He wrote the derelict's coordinates into all of them. He flagged the location in every star chart. He embedded the data so deeply that removing it would require dismantling the databases themselves. The derelict wasn't a secret anymore. It couldn't be a secret anymore. It was a fact, written into the permanent record of human knowledge, as indelible as the patterns carved into its ancient surface. Millard pulled back, or rather, he let go. The effort of holding himself together, of being Millard instead of just data, was becoming more than he could sustain. He could feel the edges dissolving, the detective becoming noise, the pattern losing its shape. He had time for one more thought. One clear, coherent moment before the blur took over. Holden and his crew were safe. The ships that had hunted them were dead in the water. The derelict was public knowledge. The data was free. Soren Adachi was about to discover that the universe had a way of holding people accountable, even when the people who did the holding were already dead. Millard let the thought be enough. He had been a detective. He had found the truth. He had made sure it couldn't be hidden. If that was the last thing he ever did. The pattern that was Millard flickered, dimmed, and became very, very quiet. The silence was the first sign that something had changed. One moment, seven ships were burning toward them through the asteroid field, and the Rocinante was running out of places to hide. The next moment, the drive signatures flickered and died. One by one, like candles in a wind. Garza's command ship first, then the escorts, then contacts that had been too far away to see on visual, only dots on the sensor display, going dark in sequence.
What just happened? Alex said.
Naomi was at the tactical display, her fingers moving. They've all lost drive power, all of them. Reactors are still running, life support is active. But every Epstein drive in Archway's fleet just shut down simultaneously.
Millard, Holden said. He didn't need to think about it. He knew.
There's no way to confirm that, Naomi said.
I know, but it was him.
Nobody argued. There was nothing to argue about. Millard had been dead for years and had spent those years doing impossible things from inside the network. Shutting down seven ship drives was just the latest in a career of impossibilities. Holden looked at the tactical display. Seven ships, drifting. Their crews alive, their communications active. But their ability to chase the Rocinante gone. They'd eventually replace the drive firmware, or someone would send tugs to tow them in. But for now, the Rocinante was safe.
Alex, plot a course for Cirrus. Standard burn.
Already on it, the Rocinante's drive lit, and the ship turned toward Ceres Station, leaving the asteroid field and its ancient derelict behind.
Naomi? Status on the broadcast?
Everywhere. Every major news feed is carrying it. Ceres, Tycho, Luna, Mars, Earth's media cycle is about 4 hours behind due to signal delay, but the initial reports are already running. The UN and NCR have both issued statements calling for an investigation into Archway systems.
And the derelict itself?
I'm seeing six different research institutions filing claims for study access. The International Astronomical Union has designated it a protected site. Three belt mining guilds have posted navigational warnings for the area. She paused. Millard's coordinates are in every public database I can check. Star charts, nav registries, academic archives. He was thorough. He always was. Holden walked to the cargo hold. He did it alone, which was unusual. He usually brought someone with him when he had to face the hard parts. Captain Elena Reyes lay in the body bag where Okoye had placed her, secured to the deck with cargo straps. A prospector, a belter, someone who had looked at the void and seen opportunity instead of emptiness. She'd found the oldest thing in the universe,
and someone had killed her for it. And now the whole system knew both things, the finding and the killing, because that was how the universe balanced its books.
"We're taking you home," Holden said, to her. To the empty hold, to himself. "Your daughter's going to know what happened. Everyone is." He stood there for another minute, then turned and walked back to the ops deck. The crew was quiet, the ship was quiet. Outside, the void was the same as it always was, vast and dark and indifferent to everything that happened inside it. Stars burned, rocks tumbled. Ships moved on their errands, carrying people and cargo, and the small urgent concerns of a species that was still learning how large the universe really was. Naomi had the star map on the display, the one from the derelict, showing 1,000 light-years of space peppered with markers and converging vectors, each marker another structure. Each vector pointing at the same distant region of space, 12,000 light-years away, where something waited that humanity couldn't reach yet. "What do you think is out there?" Alex asked. He'd set the autopilot and drifted over, a cup of coffee in his hand, looking at the map the way people looked at the ocean from a very small boat.
"I don't know," Holden said, "and I think that's the point. Whatever built those structures wanted someone to wonder. Wanted someone to look at the map and ask the question.
And the blueprint? The construction specs?
Maybe that's the answer. Build the thing, and you can go find out."
"Or it's a trap," Naomi said, not looking up from her console.
"Or it's a trap. But if it is, it's the longest con in the history of the universe. Billions of years, dozens of beacons, all to trick someone into building a bridge to nowhere.
Some traps are worth the effort.
And some bridges are worth building."
They looked at each other. The old argument, the one they'd been having since the first time the universe handed them something too big to understand. Naomi, the careful one, seeing the risks, running the numbers, making sure caution didn't die in the rush to discovery. Holden, the reckless one, pulling back the curtain, broadcasting the truth, trusting that knowing was always better than not knowing. They needed each other, they always had. Amos appeared from the machine shop, wiping his hands on a rag.
"We going there?"
Holden almost laughed. Trust Amos to cut through everything and get to the only question that mattered.
"Not today," he said. "Today we're going to Cirrus. We're going to bring Captain Reyes home. We're going to hand Archway Systems' entire operation to the authorities. And then we're going to sit in the best bar on the station and drink something expensive, and not think about what's 12,000 light-years away."
"And tomorrow?" Alex asked.
Holden looked at the map one more time, at the vast distance between here and there, at the blueprint for something that a solar system could build if it chose to, at the question that someone had carved into the oldest structures in the universe and left for whoever was brave enough or foolish enough to find it.
"Tomorrow's tomorrow," he said. "We'll figure it out."
The Rocinante flew on toward Ceres, carrying her crew and her dead and the weight of a question that would change everything. Behind them, in the dark between unremarkable asteroids, the derelict structure continued its ancient broadcast, sending its message to whoever was listening, patient and tireless and very, very old. And somewhere, in the dim noise of the system's data networks, something that might once have been a detective named Miller flickered once, faintly, and was still quiet now. The data moved around him the way water moved around a stone in a riverbed. He was still there. Still something. Still a shape in the current. The boundaries between Miller and not Miller had blurred until he wasn't sure where one ended, and the other began. He could still see things. Fragments. Glimpses. The network carried them past him and some of them stuck, caught in whatever was left of the pattern that used to be a detective from Ceres. He saw the Rocinante dock at Ceres station, saw the body of Captain Elena Reyes carried off the ship in a proper casket, not a cargo bag, saw a woman waiting at the dock, young, dark-haired, with her mother's jaw and her mother's eyes. The captain's daughter. She didn't cry when they brought the casket out, she just put her hand on it and stood very still. And that was worse than crying. He saw the news feeds, Archway Systems under investigation, Dr. Soren Adachi arrested on Luna.
The word murder used in official documents applied to official people by officials who had no choice anymore because the evidence was everywhere and couldn't be ignored. He saw the derelict. Three research ships from different institutions, orbiting at a respectful distance. Their crews studying the ancient structure with the careful reverence of people who understood they were in the presence of something sacred. The convergence point was still broadcasting, still sending its message, still waiting. He saw the star map. It was everywhere now. On news feeds, in academic papers, on the walls of bars, on every station in the system. 1,000 light years of space, marked with the locations of things humanity had never known existed. Dots in the dark, questions without answers, directions to a place no one could reach. Not yet. He saw Holden, standing in a bar on Cirrus, surrounded by his crew, holding a glass of something amber. Naomi beside him, Alex across the table, Amos at the bar, because Amos was always at the bar. They were laughing about something. Miller couldn't hear what, the details were getting harder to hold. But the picture was enough. The crew of the Rocinante, alive and together and doing what they always did. Being the people who looked at the truth and didn't flinch. Being the people who carried the dead home and held the living accountable. Being the stubborn, reckless, improbable reason that humanity kept stumbling forward despite itself. Miller let the image go. It dissolved back into the data stream, carried away by the current, and he was alone again with the quiet. Not alone, not exactly. The derelict was still broadcasting, and its signal was in the network now, threaded through the same channels that Miller drifted in. He could feel it faintly, like hearing music from a distant room. The ancient pattern, the map, the vectors, the blueprint. Miller had spent his life looking for things that were hidden. Connections, patterns. The truth behind the lie. He'd found them, and it had killed him. And then it had brought him back as something else. And then that something else had kept looking because that was all it knew how to do. Now the looking was almost done. The case was closed. The evidence was filed. The guilty would be held accountable, and the dead would be remembered, and the mystery would remain because some mysteries were too large for any one life, even a life that had lasted longer than it should have. The pattern that was Miller dimmed, not all at once, not like a light going out. More like a sunset, slow and gradual, each moment a little less bright than the one before. He was still there. He would be there for a while yet. Data didn't disappear. It just got quieter and quieter until the noise of the universe drowned it out. It was enough. It had to be enough. And in the end, it was. The derelict kept broadcasting. The Rocinante kept flying. And somewhere in the fading margins of the system's oldest network,